I want to welcome everybody to this week's episode of In the Rough with JB and Golfer Gal. I'm your host, JB, and I have a guest host with me this week that I will tell you guys about shortly, as we have a special show as we're into golf season, and we like to get everybody kind of ready to play the game as the spring rolls around and we're post-masters. This week in the co-host chair, as of last week, as you guys remember, I wasn't around, as I was doing a food challenge with Golfer Gal and Hawk commenting on my lack of ability to eat hamburgers, apparently. But this week we have a special show, and that is we have Steve from Golf Tech who's going to help us with the golf swing and fitting and everything else. So I want to welcome Steve to the show. How are you?
I'm great, JB. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Now, you know, post-masters, everybody's kind of around the country being able to get out there and play golf. And we work with Golf Tech a lot, and we're big on fitting, and we'll get to fitting a little bit, but one of the things I wanted to have you on the show and discuss with you is the golf swing in general and how people can improve.
Well, that's great. That's one of the things I think we do best as a group, so I'd love to chat about the swing a little bit.
Well, first off, you know, when it comes to the golf swing, it seems to me the most requested issue, and requested maybe the wrong word, but the issue that most golfers seem to struggle with at the amateur level is a slice. And one of the reasons that can come to be is, you know, many different swing flaws, but one that people get wrapped up about is the over-the-top swing. And we keep getting questions over and over and over again about the over-the-top swing, how can they correct that, and so on and so forth. So I wanted to have you on to kind of discuss that first and foremost.
That's great. Yeah, it's certainly one of the most common things that we get asked for as well when clients come into us for lessons is how do I fix that slice and stop the over the top? So, you know, initially when I look at that swing flaw, I make sure that I understand what they're doing in the backswing that sets up that problem. And so a lot of times people, when they swing over the top, it's caused because of a couple things they've done in the backswing that have put them in a bad position. And so it's not allowing them to swing down correctly. So I make sure of a couple things right out of the gate. I make sure that they have a good grip, because a lot of golfers that slice or come over the top have a very weak grip, which opens the face up a little bit and sort of leads to that motion. And then I make sure that they have a good weight shift. So as long as they're shifting their upper body behind the golf ball correctly and have enough shoulder turn to get the club far enough behind them that they can actually swing from the inside, those are the key pieces to allowing the club to come down the right way. And that's probably one of the biggest things, is making sure they just put themselves in a position at the top of the swing that allows the golf club to swing down correctly. And then there are some keys for the downswing that will also help repair that problem.
Now, you talk about a lot of different things, and I don't want to confuse people with swing thoughts as they go about it. Obviously, the easiest way that I believe people can fix this is to go see a Golf Tech coach and have them work on it. You can see your swing, you can get diagnostics done, and have them fix the problem. Are there certain drills that people could work on with the over-the-top swing that you think could maybe not fix it permanently, but kind of help them kind of see the way that they can get to the next level?
Absolutely. There are a few simple ones. And as you mentioned, you know, a long-term approach to fixing it is certainly the best way. I mean, you can't go in and do a workout and lose 30 pounds in that session. But at the same time, if you do things right for over an extended period, you can certainly make long-term changes. And what I would suggest is some simple drills like placing a golf club or a one of those range sticks. You know how all the guys on tour now have those orange sort of sticks that you can go buy at Home Depot or something like that for a couple dollars, and provide some good things to do on the range, and lay one of those down aiming maybe 3 or 4 degrees right of the target. And then as long as they're putting themselves in a decent position at the top of the swing, sort of visualizing the golf club following that path as it comes through the golf ball is a good way to start to think about, you know, swinging to the right of the target, or something as simple as hitting the inside right quarter of the golf ball, you know, so they're not thinking about the club coming directly into the back of the ball. They're actually thinking about hitting it from the side closest to them and then on the back right side of the golf ball. Those kinds of things provide a good visual or a good understanding of the path that the club needs as it swings through the hitting area to be able to get rid of that over the top slice. I think the average golfer thinks about swinging straight through at the target, and when they do that, because of some of the mechanical flaws in the golf swing, which we can talk about in a second, they actually are swinging to the left of the target, and that's why they've learned how to slice the golf ball.
That makes all the sense in the world and should provide a pretty good visual. You mentioned the swing flaws and things like that and when it comes to mechanics. What are you seeing with, you help hundreds of thousands of people. What do you see as like the biggest swing flaws that come in to see you?
Well, essentially, the main issue, aside from backswing problems, so, like I said, putting themselves in bad positions at the top, if they get to a good position, the main thing that causes an over to the top after that is a lack of understanding of how the shoulders work and how they tilt from left to right. And so what happens is your shoulders turn around your spine very, very efficiently in the backswing. It's a very pure rotation around the spine going back. But what tour players do, and this is where our tour averages help us, we used our motion measurement systems and measured tour players, over 150 of them. We've started to understand how their shoulders work in the downswing that helps them get the club on plane so fast. And it is very different from the average amateur. When we've measured amateurs, their numbers turn out much differently in this part of the swing. And the key thing is the tour player gets the right shoulder. We'll pretend we're talking about right-handed golfers here. They get the right shoulder to drop or go down towards the ground very quickly starting the downswing. And the average amateur golfer, the right shoulder works out toward the golf ball more than it works down. And when that happens, the arms and the club, they follow along with that shoulder. And so they get pushed outside. And then, of course, they know how to swing through the ball. So once they've gotten it started down in the wrong spot, they'll swing in towards their body and pull across it and hit that slice. So I think one of the main swing flaws that really most amateurs don't quite understand is how to get the right shoulder to start to drop as they start the downswing to get the club into a good delivery position to drive through that ball from inside to out.
Now, you talk about the swing mechanics and how to fix that. Can a lot of what you said relate to the amateurs watching the pros on television? We all watch it. We all emulate. And you see, guys, it looks effortless, and we want to imitate that, yet we all stand over the ball and swing as hard as we can with the driver, and I'm generalizing, of course, to try to hit it as hard as we can, when in reality it's not really about how hard you swing, because you really shouldn't be swinging all that much with your arms. Would that be correct?
That is absolutely correct, yeah. The use of the arms in the golf swing definitely gets a little bit too much fanfare, and so what we've seen is that the tour players use their bodies better, and the arms tend to follow along with that, kind of the dog wags the tail, not the tail wags the dog type of scenario. And when golfers understand that.
My dog would beg to differ with you.
You have a big dog or a little dog, I don't know. But
we have a little dog, and that tail just wags her around the house, but that's neither here nor there.
All right. Well, once they understand that, and they can understand the amount of effort actually needed to really hit a golf ball far. And there was a very interesting study done a couple years ago by a guy in the PGA, and he had taken people out and he essentially asked them, tell me what your 1 to 10, what your amount of effort is for your backswing and the amount of effort for your downswing. And the average person that he tested was a 7 going back and a 9 coming through. So 90% of as hard as they can possibly swing, that's what the average amateur was doing. And what he found was the highest quality of golf shots that they hit was when he had finally got them to lower those numbers to 3 going back and 4 coming through. And so that's a pretty drastic reduction in effort, in your swing. And yet the ball was going straighter and just as far. So, if you can understand the mechanics that help you get into the right positions just a little bit, and then understand the amount of effort really needed to hit it far, those two things can be a really powerful tool in helping people improve their golf games very quickly.
Now, one of the things that I wanted to discuss with you is far as the swing goes, as we're covering different things as weight shift. And it's become a popular topic, and we'll go to a local course and do our, you know, our testing and things like that, and we're testing drivers, and you see people, they'll come through and they'll swing, and by the time they make contact, they're 3 feet behind them and looking at the ball.
Yes.
Explain, A, why weight shift is important first, and B, how the average golfer who may realize they're struggling getting their weight over to the left side and why it's important.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I think that the average golfer has typically developed what people and friends and, you know, guys that are on the course that are trying to do good things for them and help them out. They're doing what people have told them to do over the years, which is essentially, you know, we all know the number one piece of golf advice given out is keep your head still, right? Or keep your head down. I mean, it's just, we hear it time and time again. Well, your body and your brain are smart enough to go, well, I need to shift my weight. So if I keep my head still, where can your weight shift? It's going to go somewhere down below your head. It's going to go in your lower body and your hips. And so the reverse pivot and the problems that we see with weight shifts, I think a lot of times have been developed because of what other people have told them. So let's say keep the head still, but you know, you got to shift to the right and then move through to the left. And it doesn't work very well when your head doesn't move at all. So essentially, with the longer golf clubs, especially with the drivers and the fairway woods and the long irons, we'd love to see the hips coiling or just twisting around, almost pretend they're in a little barrel and they just go around in a pivot, and the upper body moves just a little tiny bit behind that golf ball to start. Your head is what helps you shift your weight into your right side. And once people understand that they can let their head move just a little bit to the right, and that's not a bad thing, then they can fairly easily move to the left when they come through. So I think some of it starts from an understanding of what they're trying to do, or a perception that they've been told that, you know, if I keep my head still, I'll hit it better. And I just don't think that that's necessarily true. I think when you get down to the shorter irons, you know, the wedge and the 8, 9 irons and things like that, you don't necessarily need such a powerful weight shift. You need to hit the ground in the same spot and bottom out the club in the same spot so that you have good contact and good distance control. So I'm much more happy to let someone keep their head and keep their body very still and rotational in a wedge swing, but I'd love to see those longer clubs with the upper body moving a little bit behind the golf ball and setting them up in a position where they can drive back through to that left side much more efficiently.
Is that why a lot of players, amateurs, me included in this category, that call themselves feel players, can do very well from your scoring irons and wedges, but still will struggle off the tee quite a bit, especially with distance?
Absolutely, that can be a huge component of it. And of course, you know, in general, when I've seen more feel-oriented players come through our system, the tendency is that they've learned a golf swing that works pretty well for them over time. They've got that feel to their hand-eye coordination, and they can get it around. But sometimes those people have some flaws that they've developed over that time. And so when you move to the longer clubs, of course, the speed is exaggerated, the length of the swing gets longer, and ultimately those flaws just get a little bit bigger. And so sometimes it works pretty well for the short irons, but if there are things in there that aren't working quite as simply or efficiently as we'd like, they get worse as the club gets longer. And so that can tend to be the issue sometimes with the more feel-oriented people as well.
Now, I'm going to broach a subject as delicately as I can, because this is a highly debatable subject on the internet right now, and that is, there's a swing method that seems to be fairly popular where people end up, and I'm going to generalize it here, don't shift their weight. They start on the front side and work their way through that. In our testing, or in my testing, I should say, it worked very well for scoring irons, but when you get anything longer than that, it's a big struggle. Can that help amateurs, or in more ways, can it do harm to them, or is it just a subject that it's going to be different for every golfer when it comes to weight shift?
That is a great question, and certainly the most debated topic for many of the guys that I've talked to on tour. And I actually have a guy that I've come to be good friends with who teaches for that method, I'll just say that. And, you know, I've come to understand a lot about it and what it's good at and what it's not good at. And I think essentially one of the main things you have to look at to understand whether it is a method that you want to try is your body type. Guys and golfers, I'll just say golfers, shouldn't say guys, golfers who are a little bit bigger, okay, bigger chest, bigger arms, upper body, and bigger bellies, which, you know, the tour guys typically aren't those guys. They're usually pretty fit and pretty wiry and fairly thin. There's a few bigger guys out there. But those types of golfers struggle much more when you do not shift your weight because, let's just say your head stays very centered in the backswing or even, you know, hangs a little bit over that left side. Well, when you get yourself to the top of the golf swing, because of your bigger chest and bigger belly and bigger upper arms, there's not room for the arms and the right shoulder to drop. Then they get sort of stuck on the body and they're going to push over the top. And so it creates some problems. I don't know if you recall, Jason Gore on tour kind of, you know, fiddled around with that a little bit and didn't have success with it. And he's one of the bigger guys. And so, you know, I think if you look at your body type, that can help you understand it. I think the thinner, more athletic and a little bit more wiry guys can see some benefit from it. And I would agree that's with the scoring clubs. And I do think, you know, as we go back to what I talked about a few minutes ago with weight shift, I do think with the longer golf clubs and the driver, you don't see those guys always on the top stats for driving distance and for some of those things because the launch characteristics become more difficult when you're not behind the golf ball a little bit. You know, the big thing is get that high launch angle with low spin. And if your weight's staying more in front of the golf ball or closer to the golf ball, it is harder to create that. So I think there's absolutely some benefit to it for certain types of players. And I think that staying sort of left or more centered with the short irons is a good thing if at times. The other one small concern I have with it and is more from a medical perspective. I know that some of the medical experts in our field, I guess not even in our field, but just in the medical field, have sort of raised some flags that it might be a little bit tougher on the lower back and the lumbar spine and all that to make that kind of a movement. So I'm also, you know, always aware of that for golfers if they've had back problems or things like that, that might not be the best method. But that's also kind of body related and goes by every golfer. So,
yeah, like I said, it's a heated topic and even more so now with different coaches teaching different tour players and things like that. But I always like to get an interesting take on it. Now, in the golf swing in general, we had an interesting topic recently on the THP forum, and that is about the golf swing and how much does the golf swing change from scoring irons to driver, or should it stay exactly the same from scoring irons to driver, just different stances and moving back and so on and so forth. What are your thoughts on that? Should somebody swing the driver the same way they swing the wedge?
Essentially, they will be the same. There are a few small differences. And again, I'll sort of go back to some factual data that we've collected on, you know, tour players. And when you look at their numbers from the wedge to the driver, they actually don't change very much at all. For example, the PGA Tour average with a pitching wedge for shoulder turn at the top of the swing is about 90 degrees or just under 90 degrees, about 86. And with a driver, they turn 94. So among, you know, over the spectrum of all the clubs in the bag, their shoulder turn is essentially between 85 and 95 degrees. I mean, it's always pretty much a full turn no matter what club they're hitting. Now, the setup of the golf swing does change a little bit. And so, you know, with the scoring clubs, the ball goes back a little more, the weight shifts a tiny bit more left, and, you know, the grip's not going to change. I mean, most of the fundamentals are the same. It's just that the implement, you know, the club is telling you what to change. And I definitely want to make sure that with the driver, if the swing changes, the only thing I would really like to see different is a little bit more weight shift to the right with the upper body and a tiny bit more sweeping upward on the ball than hitting down on the ball with the short iron. So, I mean, if they can make a few small setup adjustments and then make essentially the same golf swing with maybe a little more centered turn with the short irons and a little bit more weight shift with the driver, I would say, you know, you wouldn't think about a different plane for your arms or a different angle coming into the ball from the path perspective. And you wouldn't want to try to change much up at all other than those few little things.
Now, when it comes to, you know, a person kind of working on their game in general, rather than a swing flaw, we always hear that, you know, you have to practice your short game. And I've been going through this in my head, and maybe you can just take the demons out of my head for me. And we're doing a radio show apparently just for me now. When you're practicing short game, does the short game include putting? Everybody always says, well, this person's got the best short game, but they're not a great putter. So when somebody says practice on your short game, I always assume that means they're putting. But how should one go about really working on their short game to take it to the next level?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll preface this by saying one thing. You know, we've always heard the, you know, dry eye for show, putt for dough.
I don't believe that for a second, by the way.
I don't believe it for a second either, JB, to be honest with you. I might be one of the first golf coaches you've ever heard say that. But I'll tell you, I know that that is true for tour players. But we all have to understand, every one of them hits it like a tour player, right? They're all hitting a ton of greens. They're hitting lots of fairways. And the way to separate yourself on tour is to be a little bit better with the putter and better with your wedges. So the average golfer out there, I think they'd love to hit the ball better, not slice it, not chunk it once in a while, you know, be able to go out and play in a company scramble and hit it where they're looking and a little farther. And if you got them to do that, they'd be really, really happy. And so I kind of go down that road first with people, honestly, and get them to hit the ball the way they'd like to. And then we talk about some goals for scoring and start to work towards the short game components that'll help knock off those extra few strokes, you know. But essentially, if it takes you five or six to get to every green because you're hacking a few and hitting one out of bounds, it wouldn't matter if you had Tiger's short game. You're going to get up and down for eight. So
I'm not sure I want his short game right now.
Actually, that's a good point. It's not quite as strong as normal. But to get back to your question about practice, I do think that those are almost should be looked at as two separate games. You know, putting it by itself is a very different thing from hitting a 20-yard pitch shot or a 40, 50-yard scoring shot. So I try to kind of work those into two different types of games, and I create scoring challenges for clients when we do that. So there's always a score involved with how well they hit the wedge shots or how well they putt from a distance perspective and on the short putts, you know, 6 feet, 8 feet and in. And we sort of have a scoring system that helps us, you know, identify how good somebody is at those two parts of the game. Because there really are, they're games within the game of golf. You know, putting is its own little game, and short game and little wedge play is sort of its own little game. And then the full swing is a game. So if they can kind of break those apart and say, all right, I'm going to get out here at 50 yards and see how many I can hit inside of 15 feet. And I give myself 2 points every time I do that and see how many I can get out of 10 shots each time. That creates a sort of a fun challenge that you go, now next time I scored, you know, 15 that time, next time I'm going to try to score, you know, 20. And it really helps you practice something that can be a little mundane and isn't always the most fun. You know, we love to hit the golf ball. I think that's why most people get into golf, is hitting the ball is fun. It goes far. And practicing the short game isn't always the most fun thing for people to do. So I try to make it a game, and that helps them sort of understand which of those two components they need to continue to focus on.
Well, before we leave, I have one more question for you, and we're obviously going to have you back and do kind of an open chat session with our forum members, because there's so many questions we can address here. But the last one is we talk about range time a lot, and we've done that on this show as well. How often do we deal with people just going to the range and they hit balls more so than going to the range and practicing with a purpose? Can you do more harm than good, let's say, if you're going to the range and you're just hitting balls, or let's say you go to the range and somebody's a good driver of the ball, so they get out there, they hit a couple of wedges, and they just smack drivers for a while? Or should people be going out there and significantly working on playing certain holes in their head or anything like that?
That's another great question, and I look at practice time in two different ways. I think that you have practice that sometimes need to be dedicated to mechanical practice, right? So, and typically I would look at this in the off season. So I sort of look at the golf season in two parts. I say, okay, starting right when your season ends, or when you get to fall and you're kind of hanging up putting the clubs in the garage for the year, now we can start mechanical practice. So if we can get indoors, or if we can get to the driving range on some of the warmer days and practice with a purpose, working on parts of the golf swing that you're trying to improve and being very deliberate in that. So in those cases, hitting a lot of golf balls is a bad thing. You want to have deliberate movements. You want to understand how to make the new movement you're trying to ingrain, more a part of your golf swing and more, unconscious to what you do. And then as you get into the season, you're doing functional practice. So this is, I need to be able to hit a wedge shot 100 yards 9 out of 10 times, and I need to hit 10 shots pretty quickly in a row to be able to understand if I can do that or not. So you're sort of breaking those practice times up into mechanics or function. And so if we can get people to understand that sometimes I got to go out there and I have to deliberately work on movements that will help me ultimately hit the ball where I need to hit it. And then sometimes once I've started to build that into my swing and I'm feeling better about it, now I got to go do a practice session that lets me understand whether or not I can do that. Can I put it into play and perform? And that one would require a few more golf balls to be hit. But they should always be done with the pre-shot routine that you normally do on the golf course. So I would always suggest that golfers hit fewer balls and spend a little bit more time working through their routine, working through the performance that they're trying to do. So they always have a little criteria for that practice session. I'm going to hit 20 balls, and if I get 15 of them to go right to left, which is my goal today, because I don't like slicing it anymore. So my goal is 15 out of 20 going right to left, and I'm going to do my pre-shot routine and hit that shot. That's the way to do it.
Well, I appreciate that. That's a great answer, and I think everybody can benefit from everything we've heard today. Like I said, there's so much information. We have to have you back on in a few weeks to go over some more. I want to thank Steve from Golf Tech for coming on THP Radio. This has been In the Rough with JB and Golfer Gal. Next week, Golfer Gal's back with me, and we will have a new show for you. Goodbye, everybody.